Chapter 26. Drop Sight Massacre. Hull Breach. In the Shadow of Great Wings. Tarisian shoved the body of his sergeant aside and scrambled forward. His ammunition counter flashed up the moment he touched a hand to his bolter, and it told a stark tale indeed. Among the clattering, crashing carnage, he drew his combat blade and charged.
"Victory or death!"
he cried the call of his legion.
"We are betrayed! Attack!"
Bolt shells hammered into his chest and pauldrons as he ran, throwing him off balance and breaking his armour apart. He sustained damage faster than his retinal display could track it. Tarisian staggered, feeling fluid in his throat. A dense wetness was drowning him behind his ribcage. The flash of blue hit him from nowhere, brighter than staring into the sun, tipping him back down to the ground. There, he died alongside so many of his brothers, bisected by las cannon fire and dead from his wounds before he could drown in the blood filling his lungs. The Raven Guard front ranks went down as if scythed, harvested in a spilling line of detonating bolter shells, shattered armour, and puffs of bloody mist. Black-armoured Astartes tumbled to their hands and knees, only to be cut down by the sustained volley, finishing those who fell beneath the initial storm of head and chest shots. Seconds after the first chatter of bolters, beams of achingly bright laser slashed from behind the word-bearers as the cannon mounts of land raiders, predators, and defensive bastion turrets gouged through the Raven Guard and the ground they stood upon. Argyll-Tal saw precious little of the bigger picture. Beams of ice blue, as thick as his arm, slashed and burst overhead as they carved furrows in the soil and sliced cleanly through bodies. At his side, the Gal Vorbach stood in silence, clutching their axes and blades. The iron warriors and word-bearers around them were variously reloading, opening fire again, hurling grenades, and preparing to fall back. In the eye of this storm, Argyll-Tal looked on with hooded eyes. The vox link to Tarisian remained open long enough for him to hear the warrior die, wordless gurgles transmitting over the channel as the captain crashed to the ground. Corfearan licked his yellow teeth. The wind howled around them, funneled through the Urgal Depression in a noisy roar that challenged the battlefield's thunder for supremacy. It was an unclean wind, carrying the foul smoke of tank engines in its breeze.
"I cannot see," he confessed. "It is too far."
The Word-Bearer's Legion had taken up landing positions on the west of the field, ready to sweep down and engage the Raven Guard from the flank. Three figures stood atop the roof of an ornate command tank, the Land Raider's bronze and grey armour decked out with flapping banners and etched with fingernail-fine scripture over every visible surface. Corfearan, Master of the Faith, watched the distant drop sight through a desperate squint. He was unhelmed, and his massive Terminator warplate gave him the appearance of a hunched, armour-plated giant. Erebus stood at his side, watching without effort, his Astartes vision keen enough to offer clarity.
"We are winning," he said. "Nothing else matters."
Only a flicker of emotion in his eyes betrayed his humour. Erebus was a dry soul, right to his core.
"But already the Raven Guard attacks the barricades. Far to the other side, the salamanders fall to the guns of the other legions. In the centre of it all, the few remaining Iron Hands encircle their doomed lord."
Lorgar towered above both of them, but had no attention to spare for the treacherous opening salvos against the warriors of the Raven Guard and Salamander's legions. He stared into the battlefield's heart, his eyes wide even in the wind, his lips gently parted as he watched his brothers killing each other. Fulgrim and Ferrus, the fading sunlight flaring from the edges of their swinging weapons. The wind stole the clash and clang of their parries, but even in silence the duel was beyond captivating. No senses but a Primarch's could have followed such instant, liquid movements. The perfection of it all almost brought a smile to Lorgar's lips. Lorgar knew them both, though never as well as he'd wanted to. His approaches to Fulgrim had always been rebuffed with diplomatic grace, but his brother's ire was clear. Lorgar, among all of the Emperor's sons, was the failure that just wouldn't remain silent. even in the 50 years since his humiliation in Monarchia, as the word-bearers had conquered more than any other legion, desperate to match the tallies of the Sons of Horus and the Ultramarines. Fulgrim still wished nothing to do with him, the Lord of the Emperor's Children, and oh, how proud he was that his sons alone among the Astartes could wear the Emperor's Aquila on their armour, had never voiced his distaste in expressed terms, but Fulgrim's feelings were transparent enough. He was a being that valued nothing but perfection, and Lorgar was irrevocably stained by his flaws. Ferus, Lord of the Iron Hands, was an open book where Fulgrim was a closed one. Lorgar's passion was ever on the surface, as was the passion of his legion on the battlefield. Ferus contained his wrath beneath a dignified facade, but never buried it, and asked the same of his warriors. While Ferus treasured those times on Terra he had spent working at the forge, shaping metal into weapons worthy of gifting to his demigod brothers, Lorgar had sequestered himself in the palace itself, debating philosophy, ancient history, and human nature with Magnus and the Emperor's more cerebral courtiers, advisers, and viziers. The closest they'd come to an accord was still a memory barely worthy of any family. Lorgar had come to find Ferus in his forge, working at the construction of something molten, dangerous, and undoubtedly destined to be a weapon of war. It seemed all the Iron Hands Primarch was capable of. Knowing the spiteful thought was petty, Lorgar had sought to temper it. "One wonders if you are capable of making anything that creates rather than destroys." He tried to smile, hoping it would rob the accusation of any venom as he stood uncomfortably in the heat blaring from the open furnace. Ferus had cast a glance over his dark-skinned shoulder and watched his fey brother for a moment, not returning the smile.
"One wonders if you are capable of creating anything worthwhile at all."
Lorgar's golden features had tightened, the smile now etched on rather than worn of any sincerity.
"You summoned me?" "That I did."
Ferus stepped away from the anvil. His bare chest was flecked with minuscule marks of burn tissue, hundreds of them pockmarking his dark skin from stray sparks and spatters of molten metal. A lifetime of forge work worn like a coat of metals that scarred the flesh.
"I made something for you," he said, his voice as low and rumbling as ever.
"What? Why?"
"I won't call it a rescue," said Ferus, "for my warriors wouldn't stand for that. But I owe you thanks for the reinforcement at Galadon Secundus."
"You owe me nothing, brother. I live to serve." Ferus grunted, as if doubting even that.
"Be that as it may, here is a token of my appreciation."
Ferus's legion was named for the Primarch himself. His arms were metallic, but not robotic, as if formed from some alien compound of organic silver. Lorgar had never asked about his brother's unique biology, knowing that Ferus would never explain it to him. As he reached a nearby table, he lifted a long weapon with a sure grip. Without a word, he tossed it to Lorgar. The word-bearer caught it neatly with one hand, though it was heavier than he'd expected, and he winced under its sudden weight.
"It's called Illuminarum."
Ferus was already working back at his anvil.
"Try not to break it."
I do not know what to say."
"Say nothing."
Already the falling ring of hammer hand upon yielding steel. Clang, clang, clang.
"Say nothing and leave me be. That will spare us any halting attempts at conversation when we agree on nothing and have nothing but awkwardness to share."
"As you wish." Lorgar had forced a smile to his brother's back and left in silence. Such was the extent of his closeness to Fulgrim and Ferus. Lorgar stared at the two of them now, awe paling his features, as their weapons cracked off each other, shedding sprays of power field lightning. "What have we done?" he whispered. "These are my brothers." Corfiran grunted in wordless disapproval.
"Boy, order the attack. We must support Argeltal and the Iron Warriors."
"But what are we doing? Why have we done it this way?" Erebus didn't scowl. He was far too composed for that, but Corfiran wore his human emotion with greater ease. He fairly snarled the words, leeching them of kindness.
We are bringing enlightenment to the galaxy, Lorca. This is what you were born for.
Erebus turned to regard his Primarch.
Is it not a grand sensation, sire, to be the architect of all this? To see your designs reach fruition?
Lorgar would not, could not, look away from his dueling kin. This was not my design, and you know it as well as I.
Let us not pretend I have any skill at orchestrating bloodshed and betrayal on this scale.
Corferon's lips twisted as close as they ever came to a smile.
You give me far too much credit.
It is well earned.
The Primarch's gauntleted fist was tight around Illuminarum's haft, and minute tremors narrowed his eyes with each blow that rained upon Ferus's black armor.
Ferus is tiring. Fulgrim is going to kill him.
With a grinding purr of servos, Corferon came forward to rest a clawed hand on his foster son's arm.
Do not let it grieve you. What must be, must be.
Lorgar didn't shake the hand off, which both Erebus and Corferon counted as enough of a triumph. Lorgar's feyness had worn on them both, and it took great patience and subtlety to incite him to violence. This battle had been years in the planning, and they would not allow him to foul it now with misplaced compassion. Emboldened, Corferon continued,
The truth is ugly, boy, but it is all we have.
Boy!
Mirth had no place in Lorgar's smile. I am over 2 centuries old, and I am dragging my father's empire to its knees, yet you still call me boy? Sometimes I find that a comfort, other times a weight around my shoulders.
You are my son, Lorgar, not the Emperor's, and you are bringing hope to mankind.
Enough, said the Primarch, and now he did shake his foster father's hand loose. Come, let us get this day done with.
Lorgar raised his Crozius maul to the sky. It was all the signal they needed. Thousands of word-bearers roared their approval behind him as their liege lord led them to war. The war on the surface was of no concern to him anymore. Staying alive was, but then that was always a concern. He was forever aware of that fact, which was why he was so good at it. Still, he had to admit it had become a more pressing matter and a more difficult aim to reach. Ishak had never been in a void battle before, and it wasn't something he hoped to get into again. The ship shook as if in a storm's grip, shuddering with a belligerent aggression that defied all expectation. Every 2 dozen steps he took found him thrown to the floor with knee-aching violence and resulted in hisses of pain along with a creation of new swear words, the latter usually by melding 3 existing curses together in a stream of invective. When Ishak Kadeen swore, he swore with feeling, even if not with sense. Half of the problem was that he was lost, and the other half of the problem was that he was lost on what was jokingly referred to as the monastic deck, where the word-bearers and their legion serfs went about the business of being heroes and the slaves of heroes. Sneaking onto the deck had seemed a good idea at the time. He'd hoped for some panoramic views of Astarte's training chambers or discarded suits of armor awaiting repair, or immense weapon racks to show the scale of war waged by the Emperor's legions. All of these would have made for fine, private and personal images very rarely seen from the Great Crusade, and would have bolstered his portfolio immeasurably. Stealing the grey hooded legion robe had been no trouble at all. Even slaves with vows of silence had to do their laundry. It had started well. Then the battle had started, and he'd got lost. Luckily, no word-bearers were on board, all of them committed to the world below. The legion serfs he did see were hurrying along about their business, but even they were hardly a sizable population. Evidently they had other duties to perform when their masters went to war. What they might be, Ishak had no idea.
"Shields down!"
shouted a voice over the shipwide vox, accompanied by some truly horrendous shaking.
"Shields down! Shields down!"
Well, that wasn't good. He stumbled around a corner as the lights flickered above. Another long corridor awaited him, with various junctions leading off deeper into this never-ending maze. At the far end, he could see another bulkhead of dense, multi-layered metal. He'd come across several of these so far, and was almost certain that they led to the most interesting parts of the deck. Ishak wasn't about to attempt to gain entrance, though. A single failed retinal scan would mark his location to the army units on board, and he could look forward to a quick execution. Oh, yes. He remembered the penalties for coming here all too well. The Yukar were proving to be a problem, too. Squads of them patrol the halls with their lasguns held diligently to their chests, and though he was immune to their gaze, with his robe's hood covering most of his face, they made it difficult to take any Picts, even if he had actually come across anything worthwhile. Ishak was finally considering a tactical retreat when the ship shook with enough violence to send him sprawling off balance, head banging off the steel wall. It hurt enough to stun him, and it stunned him enough that he didn't even think of swearing. That lapse was rectified several seconds later when an automated voice declared a list of breached decks over the vox. The list came to a climax with the words, "Deck 16, void breach, bulkhead ceiling. Deck 16, void breach, bulkhead ceiling." In a moment of almost poetic disgust, Ishak looked up to see the great red 16 emblazoned on the wall where he'd hit his head. It was even decorated with spots of his blood.
"You're kidding me," he said out loud. "Deck 16, void breach," the crackling voice monotoned again. "Bulkhead ceiling."
"I heard you the first time."
The ship rattled again, with a definite booming of explosions only a few corners away. Smoke billowed from the far end of the corridor. Ishak's world dimmed into the deep, unwanted red spectrum of emergency lighting. At best, it would ruin any Picts he took. At worst, and much more likely, he was about to die. Argyltal drew back his claws. The blood lining them sank into the curling metal, drank as thirstily as desert soil drinks rainwater. He released a great howl to the sky as he waded forward, kicking aside wounded Astartes and carving out at the massed Raven Guard in range. Their blades broke against his armor, each strike hitting with a curiously muted sensation. He could feel the slices as if they were chopping into the skin of his armor, but they never bled, never caused any pain.
"Blade, left, danger, kill."
The warnings manifested with tickling pressure behind his forehead, somewhere between a voice, a premonition, and a tide of instinct. He wasn't sure if Raum was warning him or he was warning Raum. Both voices were the same, and his movements were only half his own. He would swipe with a claw, but the blow would accelerate and hit harder than he could ever manage himself. He would block a sword blow, but would find his talons around the enemy's throat before he had time to think. He wrenched his head to the left. He smelled the metal tang of the descending blade. He caught the flash of sunlight along its edge without even looking, and Argyltal span to kill its wielder. The word-bearer's claws raked across the warrior's torso, and the Raven Guard dropped instantly, his armor savaged and pulled from his body. Argyltal's fingers burned as they absorbed his brother's blood. Under his helm, his grinning mouth was stained red by a bleeding tongue. In every battle of his life, he'd felt a desperation beneath the ferocity of the moment, a feverish awareness of how to survive always nestled beneath his righteous anger, even in those moments of near-suicidal attack when he'd led dozens of his brothers against hundreds of the enemy. As his claws ravaged the armor and exposed faces of the Raven Guard around him, he cast that awareness aside.
"Traitor!"
one of the Raven Guard cried at him. Argyltal roared in reply, the ceramite of his helm cracking open to reveal a jagged maw, and leapt at the warrior. The Astartes died on the blood-mulched ground, pulled and torn to pieces by Argyltal's jointed claws. He was dimly aware of snarling laughter coming over the vox. At one point, in the senseless, timeless melee, Zaphon had shouted to them all,
"The Galvorbach are released at last!"
"No,"
Argyltal replied with growling certainty, without knowing how he knew,
"not yet."
He tore the helm from a Raven Guard's head and leered into the struggling warrior's face.
"Beast!"
the Astartes choked.
"Corruption!"
Argyltal caught his reflection in the warrior's eyes. His black helm roared back at him, the left eye still ringed by a golden sun, the mouth grill split to reveal monstrous jaws of ceramite and bone, the crystal blue eye lenses leaking trails of blood down his painted faceplate.
Argeltal sank his claws into the warrior's body, feeling the tingle of leeching blood as his talons scratched at the man's organs and bones.
I am the truth.
He pulled, and the Raven Guard came apart in his hands, rendered into bloody chunks.
No peace among the stars, he said,
unsure if both of his voices were speaking, or if he merely imagined one of them.
Only the laughter
of thirsting gods.
The Galvorback howled as one as they cast around for more prey, chasing down the Raven Guard that sought to regroup and oppose the unbelievable treachery facing them. Argeltal howled loudest of all, but the sound soon died in his throat. A shadow, the shadow of great wings, eclipsed the sun. The ground murmured with his landing. Claws lashed from their power fist housings with silver flashes, and shimmering wings of dark metal reached up from his shoulders into the air above. Slowly, so painfully slowly, he raised his head to the traitors. Black eyes stared from a face whiter than imperial marble, and written across the pale features was the most consummate, complete anger Argeltal had ever seen. It was an emotion truer and deeper even than the rage that ruined the faces of the demons within the warp. And Argeltal realized it was not anger nor rage. It went beyond both. This was wrath in physical form. The Primarch of the Raven Guard turned with an inhuman cry, letting the thrumming wing blades affixed to his smoking jetpack slice out with their killing edges. Word-bearers tumbled away in droves, shredded into lumps of armored flesh. The claws followed, rending through any of the grey warriors unlucky enough to be within range of the warlord's landing. Once he was in motion, Korax never slowed. He was a blur of charcoal armor and black blades, carving, chopping, dismembering without effort, mutilating with the barest movement, butchering with an ease that belied his ferocity. Lascannon fire rained towards the Primarch as the Iron Warriors turned their turrets on the gravest threat in range. The word-bearers caught in the net of streaming fire were sliced apart as surely as the ones killed by Korax's claws, but the beams themselves flashed aside from the Primarch's armor, never striking it straight on, leaving savage burn scars without once penetrating. The voices of dying word-bearers became a conflicting chorus over the vox.
Help us!
One of the captains screamed to Argeltal. The Crimson Lord cast aside the last Raven Guard he'd killed, the warrior's neck had crackled most satisfyingly as he was strangled, and ordered the Galvorback to charge. It left his helm as a split-jawed roar, for even his face was no longer his own. Even with a cry reduced to wordless malice, the Galvorback understood and obeyed. The first to reach Korax was Ajarnis, and the Raven Guard Lord butchered the warrior without even turning to face him. A burst of flame from the flight pack seared Ajarnis's armor, slowing him long enough for the swinging wings to shear through his torso as Korax turned to face other enemies. The crimson word-bearers leapt and struck at the Primarch, but their assault did little more than their grey brothers had done.
We die in the shadow of great wings,
came the voice from within.
I know.
Argeltal leapt forward to meet his end at the hands of a demigod. Lorgar hesitated, and in that moment his Crozius maul lowered. Blood marred his ornate head, the blood of the Raven Guard, the same blood that ran in his brother's veins, ran through his genetic progeny. Bolter shells cracked against Lorgar's armor, their heat and explosive debris going utterly ignored. Just as the word-bearer struggled to stand before Korax, so too did the Raven Guard fall back and die in droves to Lorgar's dispassionate surgical destruction through their ranks. Lorgar's head snapped back as a bolter shell thudded into his helm, disrupting the retinal electronics and warping the ceramite. He wrenched the mangled metal from his face and killed his attacker with a single swipe of Illuminarum. The blow sent the Raven Guard tumbling away over the heads of his retreating brothers, crashing down among them.
What is it?
Corfiren stalked to Lorgar's side, his claws as wet as the Primarch's Crozius.
Push on! They are breaking before us!
Lorgar aimed his maul across the battlefield. Korax was wading through the Galvorback, ripping the Crimson Warriors apart.
Who cares about the albino's cowardice?
Gorfiram was frothing, spit spraying from his lips as he cursed.
Focus on the fight that matters!
Lorgar ignored the bile in his father's words, as well as the infrequent shells crashing against his armor. Given a blessed respite from the Primarch's murderous advance, The Raven Guard were falling back from him in a black tide. They left their dead in a carpet at the Primarch's feet.
"You do not understand!" Lorgar shouted over the din. "My brother is not fleeing. He has flown to where the fighting is thickest. He is cleaving a path to his gunships, drawing the worst of our firepower so his sons might escape."
Erebus was a grey blur of lethal motion, hammering an unhelmed Raven Guard sergeant to the ground and killing him with a return swing that caved in the warrior's skull.
"Sire!"
The first chaplain's armour was blackened from flame awash, the joint still smoking.
"Please, focus!"
Lorgar clutched his sundered helm in one hand. The vox link was still open. He could hear the tinny screams of the dying.
"He is killing so many of us!"
The helm fell, gripped no more. He held his bloodied maul in ironclad fists and clenched his teeth just as tightly.
"No!"
The word was breathed with absolute conviction. Corfearan's face was a mess of wounds, and even with his augmentations, he was breathing in a hoarse rasp. The battle was costing him dearly. He met Erebus's eyes for a moment, and something akin to disgust passed between them.
"Your deeds are ordained on these killing fields."
Erebus spoke almost as if delivering a sermon.
"You must not face your brothers yet. It is fate. We play our destined parts, as the Pantheon wills it." "Kill the Raven Guard!"
Corfearan growled through bleeding lips.
"That is what you are here to do, boy!"
Lorgar stepped forward and cast a sneer that settled over both his mentor and ancient foster father.
"No!"
Corfearan screamed in frustrated anger. Erebus remained composed.
"You have laboured for decades to raise an army of the faithful, sire. A region that would die for your cause. Do not deviate from the path now you at last possess what you have dreamed of."
Lorgar turned from them both, first watching the retreating Raven Guard, then seeing Korax slaughtering his way through word-bearers, some armoured in grey, some in crimson.
"We have found gods to worship,"
he said, staring without blinking,
"but we are not enslaved to them. My life is my own." "He'll kill you!"
Corfearan's sluggish Terminator warplate wouldn't let him run, but there was real fear, real sorrow beneath the anger and panic.
"Lorgar! Lorgar! No!"
Lorgar broke into a sprint, boots pounding over the churned earth and dead bodies of his brother's legion. And for the first time in his life, he went to engage in a battle he had no hope of winning.
"My death is my own as well,"
he breathed the words as he ran. He saw his brother, a man he'd barely spoken to in 2 centuries of life, a man he barely knew, butchering his sons in a vicious rage. There was no thought of conversion, no hope of bringing Korax into the fold or enlightening him enough to cease this murderous rampage. Lorgar's own anger rose to the fore, burning away the passionless killing of only moments ago. As the Wordbearer's Primarch hammered his way through the Raven Guard to reach his brother, he felt power seethe within him, aching to rise out. Always, he'd bitten back his psychic potential, hiding it and hating it in equal measure. It was unreliable, erratic, unstable, and painful. It was never the gift it seemed to be from Magnus, and thus he had swallowed it back, walling it up behind unyielding resolve. No more. A scream of release tore itself free, not from his mouth, but his mind. It echoed across the battlefield. It echoed into the void. Energy sparked from his armour, and a sixth sense, unrestrained at last, with its purity perhaps coloured by chaos, exhaled from his core. A sound like the crashing of tides in the sea of souls swept through the ravine, and Lorgar felt the heat of his own fury made manifest. He felt his unchained power reaching out, not only to enhance his physical form, but reaching to his sons across the battlefield. And there he stood, at the heart of the killing fields, winged and haloed by amorphous contrails of psychic fire, shouting his brother's name into the storm. Korax answered with a shriek of his own, the call of the betrayer, the cry of the betrayed, and the Raven met the heretic in a clash of Crozius and Claw.
"This," came the voice, "is the cry of the gods we have both been waiting for."
Argeltard had no hope of replying. The pain knifing through every cell in his body was enough that he sought to slay himself, clawing at his helm and throat, feeling his fingers burning with his own blood as he ripped hunks of armour from his flesh and fistfuls of flesh from his bones.
"Do not fight the Communion."
Again he ignored the voice. He wasn't dying, no matter how he tried. A hooked claw tore the skin from his throat, and with it, half of his collarbone. He inflicted similar injuries upon himself with each second, but he wasn't dying. He scrabbled at the armor and bone, shielding his two hearts, feverish in his need to wrench both of them from his chest.
Communion. Ascension.
The winged shadow vanished from Argyltal's vision, and above him the sky was brightened by the last rays of the setting sun.
I am alive, he thought,
even as he tore himself apart, even as he ripped a handful of steaming organ meat from his shattered ribcage and burst his first heart in his hand.
I did not die beneath the shadow, and I cannot destroy myself now. This pain will bleed you of sanity. Let me ascend.
Despite agony, no living being had ever survived. There was still a moment of fierce resistance in the war behind Argyltal's eyes. He wanted to die, to taste nothingness, not to endure further corruption. The sentience that was Raum found himself shackled deeper within by a soul ruthlessly unwilling to surrender.
I will save us, not harm us. Release me.
The word-bearer's concentration went slack, not because he believed the demon's words, but from reaching the absolute end of his strength. Argyltal closed his eyes. Raum opened them. A cloven hoof of bleached bone, wreathed in ceramite that seemed molded to fit, crushed a gasping Ravenguard warrior into the mud. Great claws with too many joints, resembling the lashing branches of winter trees, closed and opened, while each of its long fingers ended in black talons. Most of the crimson armor was bulked up and layered by dense bone ridges and knuckly spines. It stood taller than even an Astartes, though not equal to the Primarchs battling a short distance away. Its helm was crowned in pagan majesty, with great horns of ivory, and silhouetted against the bright cannon fire, it seemed to resemble the Tor of Minos from pre-imperial Terran mythology. Its legs were jointed backwards and brutally muscled beneath the armor, with powerful black hooves leaving burning imprints in the soil. Its Astartes helm was split along the cheeks and mouth grill to reveal a shark's maw with rows of bladed teeth glinting with clear acidic saliva. The demon drew in a great breath and roared it back out into the retreating ranks of the Raven Guard. That terrible wall of sound hit the Astartes as if an earthquake was laughing at them. Dozens fell to their hands and knees. Around the warped helm's left eyelens, the golden sun was all that marked the creature as the man it had been.